Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
My frustration and pet peeve over people driving in the left-hand lane, and the worst, too, we didn't even include it there, my little diatribe. The worst is that you try to pass them on the right because they force you to. They refuse to move over. They're trying to make sure that you are morally, morally locked into following the speed limit. So then you try to pass them on the right, and what do they do, Pete? Speed up. All of a sudden, they go from driving 10 miles below the speed limit to driving 15 miles over the speed limit. But somehow it doesn't happen until you go to pass them. Like, all of a sudden, you're driving an F1 road course.
When they make a lane change with you. That's the other one.
Pet peeve. And that's one of the reasons that I'll get road rage. I'll admit it. I am not the perfect person, in case you were thinking that was true. Now, I don't know if I would have driven the golf cart carrying Ryan Day and Will Howard and a few other Ohio State players into a wall at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I'm not sure that is a mistake I would have made. However, I feel for the young woman who did exactly that a few minutes after the Buckeyes had captured their first national championship. I'm watching it again, and Ryan Day nearly falls out. Poor girl. She does laugh. I think she wrecked the golf cart into the wall. And so the police, she couldn't move it. The police and some of the security had to come get it. Meanwhile, the Ohio State players and Ryan Day, they just kind of piled out and walked. But Will Howard got a kick out of it. If you have not seen it, here, I'll retweet it at A-Law Radio. This video, hit the internet. It's probably going to go viral today, but it hit the internet late last night, and at least it produced a laugh from the Ohio State contingent. I mean, you can laugh. You just won a national championship. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Good morning to you. It's a Tuesday. Man, quite a Monday, a massive Monday with everything going on in our nation, not just in sports. It was busy. We were busy, but we made it. We survived another humongous football weekend, and I'm be interested to see how many people tuned into this national championship game for a couple of reasons. Number one, it was January 20th, latest college football national championship ever. I mean, I haven't gone back and looked at all the dates, but yes, ever in modern times, at the very least. Second, it had been 10 days since the national semifinals were wrapped up. And in that time, in those 10 days, we've had not just NFL wildcard weekend, but also the divisional round. And so now that the NFL is in the mix, let's be honest, the NFL tends to suck all the air out of the room in a good way. But how many must-see TV events can fans actually absorb? There were four big games over the weekend, and now you drop the national championship on a Monday right after that. Not to mention a holiday, the inauguration, people out of their typical routines. And the game was 31-7 before they hit the midway point of the third quarter. So I'm wondering how all of those factors. Also, it was on just one channel, one network. It wasn't on streaming, and so that'll factor in as well. I don't exactly know the reason why, only that ESPN signed, or Disney, signed a contract so that it was exclusively on just this one channel and not on ESPN Plus or Disney Plus, anything like that. Now, you could find it if you had not a cable service, but a streaming service that you paid for ESPN, you could get it that way. But that didn't include ESPN Plus. So I know not everybody was thrilled with the fact that it wasn't on ABC, which a lot of these games have been on simulcast, if you will. Like Monday Night Football, for instance, is not just on ESPN, but also on ABC. So I would assume that your diehards are still watching, and that the fact that it's a, you know, it's a Monday night, maybe people are coming back and flip on the tube, and you'll get some casual viewers that will tune in as well. But it did feel like this college football playoff lasted a really long time. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. We do know that the conference commissioners and the college football playoff committee can tweak the format. But how could they change it? And that's kind of where I'm at right now, recognizing it does need some changes and maybe some tweaks to the schedule after this first run. But how will they do it? So we're open for your suggestions. Online at A-Law Radio, you can vote for TD of the Week after Divisional Weekend as well. And we'll unveil your choice coming up a little bit later this week. Shall we dive in to this clash between Notre Dame and Ohio State, the last two teams standing? When the Irish marched down the field with the opening kick and possessed the ball for 18 plays and nearly 10 minutes, no joke, the Ohio State Buckeyes, and this is game time, not actual time, the Ohio State Buckeyes were out there on the field for the coin flip. They kick off to the Irish, and then they sit. Not the defense, the offense. The offense sits on the sidelines or stands on the sidelines for the next 10 minutes of game time. 9:45 off the clock before Will Howard ever touches the ball. It was an 18-play drive of which half of those snaps were Riley Leonard, the quarterback run plays. And so it was clear this is what Notre Dame planned to do. Notre Dame wanted to control the ball, control the game, trying to keep it away from the explosive Buckeyes offense.
First and goal from the one. Here comes the 18th play of the opening drive of the national championship. Leonard takes it. He'll keep it. He's in. Touchdown, Notre Dame. It's the opening drive of a lifetime. The Irish lead 6-0. And they start the game with an all-time tone setter. Unbelievable.
Not sure you could have scripted it any better for the Irish to begin. That's Tony Simeon with the call on the Notre Dame radio network. So yes, Riley Leonard gets into the end zone and the Irish have made quite the statement. Except once you give the ball back to the Buckeyes, they've got a little something-something too. And they're just a little bigger, faster, stronger, more explosive. They've just got more weapons. And boy, did they go to work. They had the ball not once, but twice more in the first half. And even once they got through halftime, they were on a roll.
Second down, Ohio State at the Notre Dame 8-yard line. Tight end Scott motioning all over the place. Howard gets the step, fakes the handoff, sets up to throw, screens it out right side. And Jeremiah Smith with it to the 5, and he'll dance into the end zone for an Ohio State touchdown. Jeremiah Smith from 8 yards out. He gets what ends up being his 5th touchdown of the playoffs. And the Buckeyes are a PAT away from tying this game. First and goal from the Notre Dame 9. Judkins the give. Going left side off one defender. Judkins to the 5. Judkins to the goal line and into the end zone for a touchdown. Quinshon Judkins bouncing off of defenders. 9-yard TD run, Quinshon Judkins. And Ohio State has their first lead of the night. Will Howard in the shotgun gets the snap. Howard back to throw. Sets up, looks all over, takes off running. Will Howard now throws into the end zone, wide open, and it's Judkins with a catch for the score. Will Howard started to run right up the middle, but he finds Quinshon Judkins on a 6-yard TD pass play. And Ohio State now with a 20-7 lead over Notre Dame. Howard under center. Hands to Judkins. Straight ahead goes Judkins and into the end zone for another touchdown. Quinshon Judkins, a 1-yard jaunt to the end zone. His 2nd rushing touchdown, his 3rd of the night. And it's 27-7 Ohio State ahead of Notre Dame.
Well over 100 yards for Judkins and Judkins. So it was a impressive display in that they scored 4 consecutive touchdowns. That's Paul Keels on the Buckeyes radio network. And the options, what Will Howard has to work with. It's impressive. You heard the Jeremiah Smith touchdown. He's a freshman. He'll be there in Columbus still for a couple more years, more than likely. Although I guess these days you never know because of the transfer portal. But it's a pretty close team. But to have this many guys who either could have already been in the NFL or will play in the NFL, it's a luxury, right? It's an embarrassment of riches. This is why, going back to that loss against Michigan, November 30th, about 7 weeks ago, if they could come through that without the infighting and without taking it out on each other, I still believe that Ohio State had a really good chance to win the national championship because this is what the Buckeyes are built for. I don't want to say they aren't built for success in the regular season, but inside the Big Ten, and then to add Oregon into the mix now, you're talking about maybe a more challenging gauntlet and the emotional and physical wear and tear of a season inside the Big Ten. But then to have a couple of weeks off, because they didn't play in the Big Ten Conference Championship game by virtue of that loss to Michigan, and then had a couple of weeks before they had to get back on the field, I think that's exactly what they needed. A bit of a reset. And what we heard after the game was a lot about the journey. You'll hear Ryan Day talk about it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now, Notre Dame did come back, put a couple of touchdowns on the board. There was a moment, though, with about 9.5 minutes to play in the game and Notre Dame trailing by 16 points. And Marcus Freeman has got his Irish on the 9-yard line. So they fail to get in on 3rd and 9. They're facing a 4th and 9, or a 4th and goal from the 9, I should say. And he chooses to go for the field goal, which I thought was interesting. So Marcus Freeman talking about that moment when, again, you're trailing by 16, you're going to need multiple scores. Why the kick?
I think it was 4th and 9 or 10. And I just thought, you know, instead of being down 16, let's try to go down 13. And I know it's still a two-score game, but you have a better probability of getting 14 points than you do 16 points. And so if it was a shorter fourth and goal situation, I probably would have gone for it. But I just felt 4th and 9 was not a great chance for us to make that. And, you know, and decided to kick it, and we didn't make it.
Right. There was a massive doink for the kicker from 27 yards out. So it becomes a moot point, but it was kind of an interesting and I would say hotly debated decision by Marcus Freeman, who is still a relatively young head coach, although he's been getting a lot of traction in some of the NFL hiring circles simply because of how well the Irish have done this season. So they do put a couple more touchdowns and 2-point conversions on the board, which means they're now within a score in the late stages. Ohio State possessing the ball, final couple minutes, and we had not heard from Jeremiah Smith all of the second half. The freshman, though, exactly what Will Howard needed on 3rd and 11.
Out of the gun, Howard, a Notre Dame blitz, a deep throw, near side. Jeremiah Smith has it inside the 30 and taken down by Christian Gray at the 9-yard line.
ESPN Radio with that call, only because I really wanted you to hear behind Sean McDonough the reaction of the crowd when Jeremiah Smith hauls in the 56-yarder. He's instant red zone. It's a 3rd down, so had they not converted that 3rd down, Notre Dame likely gets its hands on the ball again. But it was his first touch of the second half, and boy, was it a huge one. And Howard standing in there in the face of an all-out blitz that they went on to talk about and describe. Kirk Herbstreit there on ESPN. And did the same thing. And so it was a moment where Will Howard knew what was happening, could see what was coming, but calmly delivered that football. And an impressive moment there. And Marcus Freeman talking about the challenge of guarding against Jeremiah Smith with all of his talent.
He's a heck of a player. He's difficult to cover. You want to play zone, and they'll find ways to pick you apart. You want to play man, you know, they find ways to get him the ball. And so it's a talented offense.
No doubt. And Ryan Day has got a lot of these options at his disposal. So you can see once Ohio State found that momentum and got the ball to begin the game, they were off and running. And yes, icing it with one more field goal and that big catch from Jeremiah Smith. And ultimately, it's Ohio State winning 4 consecutive games. So after losing to Michigan 13-10 in late November and people wanting to run Ryan Day out of Columbus, what happens? They win 4 consecutive games, all by double figures, and are crowned champions of this first expanding college football playoff, their first national title since 2014. And Ryan Day now can do a lot more talking about the journey, talking about the process that it took to get to this point.
The stories of these guys will be told because they've cemented themselves in Ohio State history, the 9th national champ and the 3rd, really, in the last 50 years. There's been some great, great teams in the last, 50-some-odd years at Ohio State. Great teams, great players. Only 3 have been national champs, and these guys are one of them.
You get into big games like this, whoever is able to, have the poise and the noise and be able to, overcome adversity, because it wasn't always pretty today. It wasn't always perfect, and it's never going to be. But I think we, the team that we have and the leadership that we have with Coach Day, just the resilience that this team has shown all year, it's just unbelievable.
The poise in the noise. I like that from Will Howard, the quarterback for Ohio State, who was also part of the golf cart accidents. Thankfully, no one was harmed in the making of that video. And there were lots of camera phones around, as you can imagine, because it's in the bowels of Mercedes-Benz, and there's a roped-off area where family and friends are waiting, supporters, maybe VIPs. And as the golf cart is rolling toward them, the driver, the young woman who's driving it, for some reason decides she has to back up. She's trying to do a three-point turn. If you've ever seen a three-point turn in the place of a U-turn in the middle of a road, she's trying to do a three-point turn. It does not go well. Thankfully, the structure held there at Mercedes-Benz, and the entire stadium did not come crashing down. Now, as for Marcus Freeman, heard a little bit from him about the field goal and about Jeremiah Smith. Certainly tough, though, when you think about the guys that you won't have again. You think about the leadership of your quarterback, Riley Leonard, and also what we saw from Jack Kaiser over the course of the program. It's always hard in college football, but even more so now because of the transfer portal and the NIL money that's such a lure for so many players, especially after they get on national TV and they have this platform. Think about the number of schools that are come after these guys and say, hey, I'll pay you $2 million. What are they paying you? We'll pay you more. And until they get a handle on the system, that's what's going to happen. So not only are they losing guys to the pro ranks, they're losing guys to the transfer portal, and they're losing guys to the money, to the system. And so it's unlikely that this group, maybe even the core group, with all of those factors plus graduation, is going to be able to stick together. And so you can understand the emotion.
These guys gave everything they got. And you sit up here and you listen to these two guys speak and the passion they have for Notre Dame and each other in that locker room. I'm just sitting here listening, like, this is one of the greatest gifts in life, is to be able to be the leader of this program, because you have great young people like this that share the blame when you have to share the success when you win and own the blame when you lose.
We've learned a lot. We've been through ups and downs. I've been through ups and downs. I don't even recognize the person I was before I got to Notre Dame. And it's all credit to these guys beside me and everybody else in the locker room.
The emotions of Riley Leonard. Man, it's that time of the year, and really with every pro or college sports season that gets down to the end, and the stakes are higher and the pressure is ratcheted up, but also you're closer than ever to the prize. And so it's the thrill of victory and it's the agony of defeat, and it's that stark contrast between the two. And think about Commanders and Lions over the weekend with, I want to say, David felling Goliath. I'm not sure it's never quite that stark in pro sports because of the way pro sports are dealt, the NFL particularly. But yeah, it's one team that has this euphoria, this energy, this electricity, this moment they'll never forget or moments they'll never forget, contrasted with just running into the brick wall and the season is done just like that. Now, the business of the NFL continuing. In one of the head coaching hires getting filled, speaking of the Lions losing their offensive coordinator first, I think some people surprised by the choice of Ben Johnson. We'll talk about it next at A-Law Radio, at Amy After Hours, to vote for the TD of the week. And yes, throwing it up on our Facebook page right now. Good morning to you. It's After Hours on the Infinity Sports Network.
Houston trying to snap it before the play count. Here comes a rush against Stroud on fourth down, and he's going to go down. The Chiefs not only hold, they get a sack. George Karloftis
And Jaden Hicks also there. It's not only a hold, it's a sack and a loss. And the Chiefs will have the ball in Houston territory. A fourth down and 10, loss of 14 yards.
When you get a sack, you know, it's a big thing, you know, it's a big deal, you know, both as a play, as a stat, but also for the morale. You know, you get to the quarterback, so you know, when multiple guys are able to do that, I don't know how many we had today, seven, eight, yeah. When you have eight sacks, that gives you a pretty good chance to win usually.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of one, George Karloftis, and he had a career-high three sacks among the eight for the Chiefs against the Texans in the divisional round. He is our Defensive Player of the Week, sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces DOD, veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Mitch Holtis with the call. Not only did Karloftis provide this jolt of energy, it seemed like he was in the backfield a ton. He also had four, let me check my notes real quick. I think he had another four QB hits on top of it. Yep, three sacks, four hits of C.J. Stroud, so that C.J. was constantly under siege or under pressure. And the same was the case for Patrick Mahomes in many of his drives or many of his snaps, where Will Anderson and others were getting in his face and were getting on him and making it uncomfortable for him in the pocket, or not allowing him to escape through the middle of the pocket. We seem like a hole opens up in the middle of the pocket for Patrick Mahomes when he scrambles. And so both defenses were game. It was a pretty tough day for the offenses. And I think for the Chiefs, having had a few weeks off, remember, they didn't have starters play in week 18. Then they had the bye. So it had essentially been 3 weeks since they had played football that mattered, the starters. And I think you could tell the rust, but also a really tough defensive matchup. But what did we see from the Chiefs? Steve Spagnuolo's defense stepping up, as they have done now for 2 years. 2 years we've seen that defense crush it and come through in big moments, especially when the offense maybe didn't provide as much margin for error. It's been clear that the Chiefs' defense is more than game and more than capable. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You can vote for TD of the Week at Amy After Hours. And while we're talking about the Texans, C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans and others doing their exit interview.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
He's meeting the media on Monday with the end of the season.
Having just like a day or two to go back and look at it and kind of reflect on the season. You know, it's kind of the same mentality, just like super grateful for, you know, the people, you know, you come in to work with, the hard work people put in. And, you know, of course it hasn't been perfect, but when is it ever perfect in your life? So,
right.
I'm more,
you know, excited because I know the only way is up, you know. And if even in a year like this, if, to me, you know, it was a successful year, not to the point of the standard that I would like, but, you know, to have another year of a playoff win and, you know, to be 2 years in, man, it's amazing. And I'm not going to get comfortable, you know, with that result. I want more. So, and I'm not going to get comfortable with anything less. You know, I want more. And but I'm grateful for it all because I know that these are type of moments in life that I'll learn from for the rest of my life.
Love C.J. Stroud. Big fan of his character, of his leadership, and obviously a couple days to let those emotions die down a bit. But we got to see multiple sides of him this year. Remember when his best friend on the team, Tank Dell, suffered the really serious injury? Was it around the holidays? I think it was the holidays. I don't remember exactly what week it was. And he's in tears on the sidelines. He's distraught over what he's seeing his friend in pain. They went without Nico Collins for a while. And then, of course, losing Tank Dell at the end. Stephon Diggs being injured for most of the season, certainly the second half. Joe Mixon out for a little bit and on and off the field with injuries. So there was a lot of moving parts. Also, the offensive line is still a big question for these Houston Texans. But whether or not you would call this the sophomore slump or the step back, I don't think that's necessarily fair. It's just they're not catching anyone off guard. And now the real work begins. In the AFC, they defended their title as the South champions, but they're not catching anyone by surprise. And there are some real tough opponents in the AFC. And now that you're a division winner, you've got a little bit of a more difficult schedule and people know you're coming. So how do you get to that next level, D'Amico Ryans?
My position and my role is to take this organization to new heights. And new heights for us is finding a way to get to the AFC Championship, somewhere we haven't been as an organization. And to do that, we need, you know, everybody on board, like Will Anderson, a guy who is the flag bearer for Swarm and the mentality and everything that we need from our entire team.
D'Amico Ryans got a lot of people behind him, people who believe in him. What a great hire for the Texans. And so, yeah, they do have the pieces in place. Of course, everybody's got injuries that they need to recover from. The defense, it was good. It was physical. It was tough. Bring a lot of effort. Mention a few areas where they need to improve and get better. And it's part of the learning curve because he's a now second-year NFL head coach. And Stroud and some of the others are still young and still growing up on the job like Will Anderson. But I believe they're headed in the right direction without a doubt. Can Ben Johnson do that with the Chicago Bears? Caleb Williams finishing up his first year as a rookie. No doubt that is a massive draw for any coach. But I think this was a bit of a surprise because there was some talk that Tom Brady really coveted Ben Johnson in Vegas. And instead, he decides to go with the Bears and stay inside the division. A little bit long with Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports HQ, but let's cram it in here because he's got some great details on this hiring.
The Chicago Bears had had their eye on Ben Johnson for some time. Obviously, they've seen him in the division twice a year for the last couple of years, obviously, with the Detroit Lions. Saw him up close late in the season. The Bears ran a very robust and exhaustive search. I think anyone would say nearly 20 head coach interviews that they did. But they didn't want to waste any time with Ben Johnson, who he had 4 interviews. And then the Patriots obviously going with Mike Vrabel, something that I believe Ben Johnson was aware of even when he took the interview. And so it came down to the Bears, the Jaguars, and the Raiders. I reported on Sunday for the NFL Today that while all 3 teams were very much in the mix, the Raiders had planned to do a very strong push beginning today, perhaps into Tuesday, trying to get an audience and company with Ben Johnson. He had been wooed by Tom Brady, and Tom Brady had done a lot to try to get Ben Johnson to Las Vegas. But Brady would not be his day-to-day boss. That would, of course, be Mark Davis. And so while Tom Brady was certainly very interesting to Ben, I believe that that he kind of saw beyond just this interview process, as well as the division, as well as the inability right now, it looks like, to get a quarterback. And so Chicago, which had been the leader, I think, for a lot of folks, for Ben Johnson over the last several weeks, really started to come into focus these last few days.
Good stuff there from Jonathan Jones on CBS Sports HQ. So, yeah, the Raiders were part of the mix. The Jaguars were, too. They've obviously got some great offensive pieces, but ultimately the Bears. I think this is going to be a home run. Here are a couple of quick names to throw at you. Dennis Allen appears to be his choice for defensive coordinator, a veteran head coach, a longtime employee in the NFL. And then Darren Rizzi for the special teams coordinator. How about that? Taking two guys from the Saints, well, they were the Saints coaching staff, to help him get started there in Chicago. At A-Law Radio, our Facebook page too, vote for TD of the week coming up. Interesting discussion about this first expanded college football playoff and, of course, the Buckeyes as champions. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Am. Ohio State watched their 24-point lead dwindle to just 8, needing a big play on a third down to hold off the Notre Dame comeback.
Howard out of the shotgun, back to pass at his own 25. He'll gun that deep down the right side, and it is caught by Jeremiah Smith at the 30 of Notre Dame. He's taken to the Fighting Irish 10-yard line by cornerback Christian Gray. Howard to Smith, getting the Buckeyes in the Giant Eagle red zone.
Jeremiah Smith, 5 catches, none bigger than that 56-yarder on 3rd and 11 with 2:38 remaining. He had 88 yards and a touchdown at all as Ohio State held off Notre Dame 34-23. Call courtesy of the Ohio State Radio Network. Will Howard threw for 231, 2 scores. Quinshon Judkins, 100 yards rushing, 3 total touchdowns. O'Reilly Leonard accounted for 278 yards and 3 total scores. But it's Ohio State capturing their 9th national championship. Ryan Day getting his first, but he was quick to deflect the praise onto his players.
The stories of these guys will be told because they've cemented themselves in Ohio State history. The 9th national champ and the 3rd, really, in the last 50 years. There's been some great, great teams in the last, 50-some-odd years at Ohio State. Great teams, great players. Only 3 of the national champs, and these guys are one of them.
Elsewhere, the Bears have landed their new head coach. They go with former Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson. Bears getting the hottest young coach on the market. 38-year-old helped turn a Detroit team into a premier offense in the last 3 years. Now looking to take Caleb Williams to Chicago to the next level. Elsewhere, the Colts going with Lou Anarumo as their defense coordinator. Anarumo spent the last 6 years with the Bengals, takes over for Gus Bradley in Indy. NBA, the Celtics just buried the Warriors 125-85. Pelicans outlast the Jazz 123-119 in overtime. C.J. McCollum poured in 45. Cavs ripped the Suns 118-92. Donovan Mitchell at 33. Knicks rallied by the Hawks 119-110. Jalen Brunson at 34. Grizzlies have been the T-Wolves 108-106. Bulls drill the Clippers 112-99. Hornets top the Mavericks 110-105. And the Pistons erase the Rockets 107-96. Behind 32 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 assists from Cade Cunningham. And from baseball, the Blue Jays and outfielder Anthony Santander agreeing to a 5-year deal, $92.5 million. 30-year-old put up a career-best 44 homers for the Orioles this past season. I'm Marco Belletti.
855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with us, the Infinity Sports Network. Give us a call, 855-212-4227.
The stories of these guys will be told. Because they've cemented themselves in Ohio State history. The 9th national champ and the 3rd, really, in the last 50 years. There's been some great, great teams in the last, 50-some-odd years at Ohio State. Great teams, great players. Only 3 of the national champs, and these guys are one of them.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Ryan Day wins the national championship with Ohio State 7 weeks after that lost to Michigan that had people calling for his head, calling for him to get run out of Columbus. So how did the Buckeyes end up here? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I talked to Ralph Russo of The Athletic in Atlanta. Thankfully, they don't have snow yet, so the planes should be able to get out on this Tuesday morning. But I asked him exactly that. How did Ohio State pull this off?
Well, in some ways, it's a testament to the new world order, very much so in college football, right? They simply would not have gotten a chance to do this
right
in the old systems. And because of this new system, and it gives more teams some opportunities, frankly, it's a better judge of who the best team is overall, right? If you play more games against really good teams and allow some of these good teams to have a slip up here or there, you're probably more likely to find the absolute best team. And I think where Day and his players, should be given the most credit is you lose the Michigan game, the sky is falling in Columbus. You know, as you said, people want to run your coach out of town. You look like the biggest disappointments. You lost your rivalry game 4 years in a row. That was the reason why a lot of these really good players came back to Ohio State for another year. They've got about a half dozen, close to a 10 players who clearly could have been in the NFL already. Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau and, you know, Travion Henderson, Emeka Egbuka. Like, these guys all could have been first, second, maybe third round draft picks last year. They all come back, and then you lose the game you came back to win in the Michigan game. So I think that there was a lot of folks like myself who thought, well, yeah, they're going to make the playoff, but where's their head at? Are they going to be able to recalibrate and recoup and end up coming up with a big effort? And really, I guess, you know, in some ways they came out as their best selves because they played at a really high level throughout the entire playoff. I mean, you know, they got a little sloppy in the second half today. Texas hung around with them. But they looked like the best team in the country today, and I think a lot of people came into the season. They looked like the best team in the country throughout the playoff, playing a lot of really hard, tough teams, and I think that's the team that we thought we would see at the beginning of the year.
When Notre Dame goes on that 18-play, nearly 10-minute drive, the opening possession, and Ohio State, Will Howard and company are standing on the sidelines, what's the reaction inside Mercedes-Benz?
Yeah, I think it was stunning to a lot of folks because, I think me and a lot of people came into this game thinking, as impressive as Ohio State's offense can be, its defense is the best part of this team. You know, they've got NFL players at every level, including Caleb Downs, the Alabama transfer at safety, who is an absolute game changer. And for Notre Dame to sort of exert its will on with an 18-play drive that takes up almost most of the quarter. and it also is a start that is basically, here's the game plan for Notre Dame to win this game, right? Burn a lot of clock, low possessions, grind it out, run Riley Leonard. I think the downside of that is those types of drives are hard to replicate. They ran Leonard 9 times on that drive, right? They didn't gain any big, particularly big explosive plays on that drive. They were just converting third and threes and getting 5-6 yards at a time, then a couple of 10-yard passes in there. So it's a great drive to start, and it plays exactly into the type of game Notre Dame wants to play. But you do find, but then Ohio State comes immediately back and scores. And Notre Dame has a couple of bad drives, and that was the problem. Like, they got into a situation, Notre Dame, where they had to match Ohio State, even though there was only 6 possessions in the first half of this game. Ohio State scored on all 3 of its. Notre Dame only scored on the first one, and it just, you know, you just can't, if you're not stopping Notre Dame, Ohio State, you know, you got to be able to match them. And that was the problem. They had a couple of drives where they couldn't match them. Once Ohio State gets out to the lead, they're a good bully. They're a good team, like playing with the lead. And as much as Notre Dame makes a great second half comeback to make it interesting, it's just hard to give Ohio State that space with the lead.
Ralph Russo is with us in the wake of the national championship, and it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I want to ask you to grade this first expanded playoff in 3 different areas. First, how would you grade the entertainment value of this new playoff?
I got to say an A minus, maybe a B plus. Listen, I found even in the blowouts, the games at home were great spectacles, right? I thought because it's not just competitiveness. Let's say A minus, because it's not just competitiveness of games. The NFL playoffs had a bunch of duds this past weekend, right? The last couple of, well, not this
first
past
weekend.
Weekend.
First weekend.
Like, right. Its first weekend was mostly blowouts. So, but I thought the scenes, the home games, the storylines, the sort of like interesting teams and interesting matchups, even though they didn't, like, you know, sort of Cinderella teams getting a chance. Like, that was all real good the first 2 weeks, even if the games themselves, there was only a handful of really competitive ones. So I would say, you know, not just the competitiveness of the games, but again, storylines, atmospheres, build up. I thought that was A minus.
How would you grade then the competition of having the 12 teams in with the way the committee planned it out?
Yeah, you know, so yeah, so again, that goes back to the competition a little bit. And again, I find myself thinking like, I'm not so worried about the, let's give that a B, but I'm not necessarily so worried about the teams that were put in as maybe we need to do a little better job seeding those teams, right?
Okay.
Long story short, they created this playoff when there was a Power Five, when there was a full Pac-12, right? So when Texas and Oklahoma were not in the Big 12, but they were not in the SEC, they were in the Big 12, and USC and Oregon were in the Pac-12 and not in the Big 10. So conference realignment, when they came up with the idea, we had our old conference alignment. Conference realignment comes, and now all of a sudden the balance of power throughout the country is really shifted. So having Arizona State and Boise State get byes, it creates a funky, you know, you're talking about the number 9 and 12 teams in the country in terms of the rankings, but they were the number 3 and 4 seeds. So you create Penn State with a little easier path. Oregon has to play Ohio State in the second round. Mm. Like, that's probably not what you're looking for there. So I'll give that about maybe a B minus, but mostly not necessarily because the games weren't competitive, just because the seeding created some matchups that probably we could have had later or earlier, or, you know, just some different matchups.
Gotcha. So full disclosure, before I ask you about the last one, I don't love the fact that the games were stretched out as much as they were. And I did read that the committee or the commissioners had the ability to tweak the structure. So then, final one, how would you grade the structure? Meaning like how it was laid out with the bowls, the dates, all that kind of, the logistics, I guess.
So I think it's probably a B minus C plus structure, but I will also say this. I don't know if you can do much about it. Like that's there. The calendar is what the calendar is. You have, this is kind of a long, I won't give you the really long explanation, Amy, but it's just like, you're going to have to play some games against the NFL, or you're going to be putting these games on Wednesday nights. And I don't think that's a great thing either. So you're either butting up against the NFL. You have to give people some days, some time off. I mean, they are college players and not pro players. So you kind of need at least a week or so after the season ends, I think, to do this. There's been some talk of moving up the entire season. There's issues with that in terms of TV contracts and, you know, when they want a lot of game, when these networks that are paying billions of dollars want a lot of inventory on Saturdays and Friday nights. So it's just hard. You know, again, like, I can understand the problem. The season lingers long. The NFL playoffs sort of take over, and I think it loses a little bit of buzz for those of us who don't live and die with the sport, but like me,
right?
But I do get it, but I just don't know if there's a really good fix, because the calendar is what the calendar is.
Interesting food for thought with Ralph Russo. And you can find the rest of the conversation. We talked about Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame and just some of the other elements of the national championship and the college football playoff. But I think it's intriguing to consider, do the conference commissioners, does this college football playoff committee decide that they need to change the structure? Because I saw more than excitement over the game itself finally kicking off. It felt to me, and Pete will get this, like the NBA, when it goes 9 days in between its conference finals and its NBA finals, uh-huh, and people have lost all the interest in it. It's just not exciting anymore. You've kind of lost all the buzz. And that, to me, seemed to be the number one kind of reaction. Our friend Scott Farrell, remember Scott? He's now with Sports Grid. Thank you. And he was crushing it on social before this game. He's like, I've celebrated two birthdays while waiting for this game to kick off. I mean, that's kind of the idea, is people are making fun of the fact that it's taking forever and that people just don't care anymore. And so I kind of feel that the committee, well, it's the commissioners really, need to figure out how they can condense this a little bit more Yeah, and then there was something else that he tweeted too, which is, I've waited so long for this game to start, I don't bleeping care about it anymore. But and I know he's joking, but that's why. That's the idea, is you wait 10 days and you're in the NFL mix and people just don't care as much anymore. They've lost interest in it, not to mention it's a holiday weekend, it's the inauguration, it's all of this stuff all wrapped into one. It's a tough place to insert a college football game. And then it's 31-7 minutes after halftime, which also probably caused people to tune out. I know around the United States, as we wrap up here, that there are more than 200 million people facing extreme cold weather warnings or some type of extreme weather that they're just not used to. Like my mom getting snow in the Houston area. If you've not seen the pictures of Kyle Field, which is where Texas A&M plays in College Station, Texas, you have got to see the photos. It's pretty cool. The entire field is blanketed with snow. Putting it up now at A-Law Radio. Vote for TD of the Week. We're back tonight for the Hump Show with no football, but news. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!